And welcome back to Coast tonight with my guest, Dr. Deepak Chopra. Doctor, when we were talking about the person who had the evil ability to point that bone at you, does the person who is on the receiving end necessarily have to know that it's happening?
Well, if they know, then the effect is more. If they don't know, the effect is still there. If it is an intent that is supported by the collective, it's a belief that's supported by the collective consciousness of that culture or that community. So collective intent has a lot to do with it. So, you know, we make certain assumptions about what is true and what is not true. And if our collective assumption is that something is true, then it, and that reaches a critical threshold, then that becomes true for everyone. And actually, you know, a good example of this is advertising. When, you know, somebody advertises whatever they're advertising, Marlboro cigarettes or whatever, then once they reach a critical threshold, then everybody buys into that particular brand. Or, you know, when you do opinion polls, for example, you poll only 2 or 3% of the people, but you can still predict what the outcome is going to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. These events in people's lives also points out to me that there's some incredible order here in the universe, an order that just didn't happen. I would love to get your thoughts on that, because it was not accidental, was it?
No. Actually, the order is very interesting, because the order results from what they call a discontinuity. And that discontinuity is the space between events. So, you know, between your thoughts, there's a little space. And that is the discontinuity. There's a poem of Robert Frost where he says, "We dance around the ring and suppose the secret sits in the middle and knows." It's in that space, which is between events, that when intention is introduced, it synchronistically, creatively organizes the outcome by organizing and correlating almost an infinity of space-time events. Now, today, some evolutionary biologists are saying that that's what happens periodically in evolution as well. So there's no fossil record, for example, between amphibians and birds. And the intent to fly actually orchestrated the wings of the bird, or the intent to fly, and we can talk later about how the metamorphosis of a caterpillar occurs. In fact, I should tell you about that now. It's a fascinating phenomenon in biology.
All right.
So during a certain stage of its development, a caterpillar becomes extremely grotesque and voracious, and it consumes more than it should, and its body cells start to die. And they start to become very chaotic and diseased. Now, within the body of the caterpillar, randomly, here and there, are cells that scientists call imaginal cells, as in to imagine. And they resonate at a different frequency. The immune cells of the caterpillar look at these imaginal cells and they say, you know, these cells are foreign, let's attack them. And because these cells are resonating at a different frequency, for some reason, the immune cells get very confounded, confused, they don't know what to do with them, and finally give up. Meanwhile, the imaginal cells start to cluster in groups and soon start to connect with each other. And as they connect with each other and start to reach a critical level of connectivity, the rest of the body of the caterpillar really starts to die and gets liquefied, and the imaginal cells start to use that as their nutritive soup, as their culture medium. And when the imaginal cells reach a critical threshold of connectivity, then a very strange thing happens. A dormant gene that's been sleeping wakes up, and in that gene is the genetic code for the wings of a butterfly. And from that is constructed totally, completely a new body. The old heart liquefies and a new heart is formed. The old intestines liquefy and the new intestines. It's like you took your bicycle to the repair shop And when you went to pick it up, there was a Boeing 747.
Yeah, yeah.
And then from this emerges the beautiful butterfly with wings and the flight to freedom. And this is really the mechanics of what is called a quantum leap in transformation, a metamorphosis. And so too, when society, you know, collectively dreams a dream, then that dream becomes true for everyone.
Do you envision the time, Doctor, where people will be able to do almost what the caterpillar has been able to do, a complete metamorphosis, maybe a new arm if they lose one, or a new leg?
You know, it is being suggested now that we are in a stage of evolution where all the chaos we see in the world around us might in fact be our nutritive soup. If we are the imaginal selves, and all we have to do is collectively intend the next phase of our evolution. Now, a great Indian seer by the name of Sri Aurobindo actually suggested that as we evolve into this next stage, then we're not talking right now about new arms and new eyes and things like that, but we're definitely talking about new cognitive and perceptual mechanisms. In other words, extrasensory perception, precognitive dreams, remembrance of other lifetimes, remote healing, all these things that that have been actually noted in a few exceptional individuals could be quite commonplace, including, you know, things like what we call telepathy, but which were actually synchronistic.
You know, when I see pictures of Earth that a spaceship, for example, has taken of us, and I look at it, and I have a difficult time trying to believe that there are 6 billion of us running around on this.
Life started as on this planet in volcanoes as little bacteria, and then the bacteria got together and they became multicellular organisms, and they got together and ultimately became plant life, and plant life consumed carbon dioxide and poisoned the earth with oxygen, and therefore animals evolved to consume the oxygen, and then the animals went up to the whole tree of evolution into primates, and from there a quantum leap, and here we are, humans. So all this has happened in less than 3.5 billion years.
And you know, we're at the right distance from the sun. We're tilted the right way. It's just amazing to me how this has all happened without any apparent accident.
Well, you know, it's like saying that a hurricane went through my junkyard, and after it left, there was a space shuttle, and it's all accidental.
Yeah, yeah. That doesn't happen like that. There's much, much more to that. As you begin to continue to think about these kinds of things, and of course what led you up to write the book, The Spontaneous Fulfillment of Desire, did some things happen to you in your life, that were coincidental as well?
Many. I mean, you know, when, I was training in, advanced medicine and endocrinology, I was with a very famous scientist. I thought he was going to get the Nobel Prize, but after I joined him, I found out that it was all, you know, a charade. It was competition and greed and publishing for the sake of publishing. And I became very unhappy. And every time I used to go to the lab, I used to see, no matter what, you know, there used to be a Boston Globe there every day, and no matter what page I opened it, I would be noticing a little ad from an emergency room. And it was kind of uncanny that every time I opened the newspaper, that ad was. One day, this boss of mine was very mean-spirited, and he started, you know, basically criticizing what I was doing and made some rude remarks. And we began to have a little argument, and the newspaper again fell off the desk on the floor, and there was this ad. And at that moment, you know, I looked at that ad and I knew that I had to walk out of that place. And I went straight to the emergency room, got a job there, left this position. That's when I first met a teacher in advanced meditation, and my whole life changed after that.
Somebody was saying, Deepak, look at the ad.
Right.
Get the job. Now, of course, that doesn't happen, as you say, by accident. It doesn't happen. So is there an intelligence behind that? I mean, what created that ad that would keep popping up until you finally realize you're going to act on it?
you know, here's something that I can, our listeners can start doing tomorrow that will actually accelerate their experience.
All right.
At the end of the day, before you go to bed, just close your eyes and recapitulate the whole day, which means just sit there with your eyes closed and watch yourself from the moment you got up in the morning till the moment you're going to sleep. So you're brushing your teeth, you went to office, you met so-and-so.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't take more than 5 minutes to recap. And then after you sleep, if you can, possibly, you recap your dream. Because, you know, dreams disappear very fast. But if you, on waking up, you recapitulate them. Then what happens is, even if you do this for a few days, you'll see certain themes emerging. You'll see a pattern to a story. You'll see certain episodes occurring over and over again. You'll see patterns, encounters, meetings, relationships. And soon you'll start to see that they're actually weaving together a synchronicity. So the patterns are always there. We don't notice them. So, you know, it's once you start to notice them, then instead of being a random character in an accidental story, you become the director, the producer, the choreographer, and the protagonist of the story.
I have a difficult time trying to understand why I'm here, why we're here, and I'm wondering if you can help me with that.
Well, again, you know, the subatomic theory of quantum non-locality says that if two subatomic particles collide with each other and exchange energy, then if they separate from each other, they remain connected or correlated with each other for all of eternity. So the people that we bump into, the relationships that we have, as souls, we've had some kind of bond or relationship with them for since the beginning of time. And we bump into them over and over again. We learn lessons from each other. And as a result of that, we move to a higher level of our own awareness. You know, we were all differentiated aspects of the same spirit. And as we move to different locations in space-time, even though we go through this experience of separation, we have a longing to go back to our source, to connect with the infinite spirit or domain of consciousness or divine intelligence from where we came. So you can say the purpose or why we are here is to have the return of the memory of wholeness. And every time we experience love in any shape or form, there's a glimpse of that. That's why we feel good when we're experiencing love.
The fact that you and I are talking tonight, does that mean that maybe in past lives we had some kind of connection, or is that not the case?
Well, since the soul can't be squeezed into the volume of a body and the span of a lifetime, what are the chances? How many people are there on the planet? You just said 6 billion of us,
yes,
right?
Yes.
How many people are talking to you tonight or have talked to you? So the ones that talk to you, there is definitely some kind of connection.
The fact that people have this ability to do this over and over again until they get better at it or perfect,
mm-hmm.
Is that too a natural occurrence? In that's
yes,
the way it was supposed to be?
Part of evolution. You know, we always want to evolve to higher levels of expression, higher levels of creativity, higher level of bonding, connection, compassion, love. That's part of evolution.
What would happen to this planet if everyone, 6 billion of us, used this power for good instead of what's been going on worldwide? What would happen?
Well, actually, according to what we know, it doesn't even have to be 6 billion of us. It can be as little as 1 to 2%, like those imaginal cells, that have to creatively have the same intentionality, and then the world would transform. In fact, you know, if I may, there's a website that our listeners can go to.
Sure.
It's www.anhglobal.org. anhglobal.org. And ANH stands for Alliance for the New Humanity. It's an organization that I founded, and we have now Nobel laureates, Peace Nobel laureates, Economics Nobel laureates. And what we're saying is it's possible to create a world which is healthy, which has sound ecology, where there is justice, where there is economic benefit for everyone, and where we can resolve conflicts without violence and war. And these, we're doing this through the creation of peace cells or imaginal cells throughout the world, just as the imaginal cells of the caterpillar. And we are having our first meeting in Puerto Rico on the 11th of December. It will be, carried worldwide by the media and also will be webcast. But anyone who wants to come to Puerto Rico and join us for that meeting is also welcome. We're going to have, as I mentioned, Nobel laureates and scientists and all the people who understand consciousness saying, that a dream that we dream alone is only a dream, but a dream that we dream together could become reality if I have our collective intent on that.
Well said. Now, I think what we'll do is we'll link up that website you just gave me. We'll put it on the Coast to Coast AM website.
That'd be great.
Have everybody link right into that.
So it's www.anhglobal.org. And when you come to that website, you'll see a wombat. Wombat is an Australian marsupial that is near extinction. You just click on the wombat, and it gives you a one-minute summary of what can be done if we all agree to collectively coincide and synchronize our intent.
Can one individual change things, or is he or she just not powerful enough?
No. One individual has in the past. Mahatma Gandhi has. Jesus Christ did.
Uh-huh.
And so many people did. Martin Luther King did. But that one individual has to have a level of consciousness where they don't identify with their ego at all, where they are so deeply entrenched in their spirit that their intent is not a selfish personal intent. Their intent is part of the collective dream.
In your definition of ego, I mean, is it what we all think of, the person who, praises himself in front of other people and things like that? Is that what you mean?
The characteristics of the ego are, I am either superior or inferior to someone. I need to control, manipulate, insist, beg, cajole, convince in order to have control over the situation.
Mm-hmm.
I have to really try hard. And it's always full of fear. The ego is full of fear. The ego is our self-image. It's not ourself. It's not our soul. The ego is built up through opinions, through public opinion, and uses agency power. Agency power, the power of money, the power of political office, the power of being president of, the company or the state or the country or
Sure. Whatever.
That's agency power. Real power is self-power. Mahatma Gandhi doesn't need agency power, or Martin Luther King doesn't need agency power, or Mother Teresa doesn't need agency power. It comes from a much deeper strength of spirit.
Stay with us. Deepak Chopra, my guest. I'm George Norrie. Now, as we continue our discussion with him, we'll have 2 hours of phone calls as well. We'll open up the phone lines to give you an opportunity to chat with him as well. This could be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I'll be back in a moment. This...
Would you pay 15 cents to hear this show in its entirety? That's the daily charge for Streamlink. Sign up at www.coasttocoastam.com.